What if he didn't go and wash? Like, yeah. Would he have been healed? Faith and obedience go hand in hand.
Absolutely.
And in this case, it's so simple. Go and wash. And then mm-hmm. when he comes back, they're like, oh, you know, who healed you? Well, Jesus did. I don't know if this man realized it or not, but he's proclaiming Jesus. He's proclaiming the works of Jesus. And mm-hmm. it's like,
yes.
Yeah. Oh, it can be so simple.
You're listening to If That Makes Sense. It's Family Life's podcast about life following Jesus. I am Tim. I'm in Family Life's radio department.
I am Becky. I am in Family Life's radio department.
And I'm Hope, and I'm in the performing arts department.
We are walking along with Jesus still, and we're in chapter 9 of John's gospel. And I'm excited because we're in an episode where he's not just getting confronted by the Pharisees this time.
This is new. This is new for me, at least. All of the ones I've been on uh-huh. is like aggression, Pharisees.
So true.
Yeah.
This is. And I can't make any promises about next episode.
Well, at least this one will be refreshing.
But today we've got a healing, y'all. We've got a miracle, and it's awesome. And actually, next episode, it's going to be super cool because one of my favorite one-liners in the Bible comes up next episode, but that's not for today.
Oh.
Here we go. We're doing Jesus Heals the Man Born Blind from John chapter 9, verses 1 through 12. I think I asked Becky to start. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
You did.
Yay. Yep. I remember things now.
As he went along, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" "Neither this man nor his parents sinned," said Jesus, "but this happened so that the works of God might be displayed in him. As long as it is day, we must do the works of him who sent me. Night is coming when no one can work."
"While I am in the world, I am the light of the world." After saying this, he spit on the ground, made some mud with the saliva, and put it on the man's eyes. "Go," he told him, "wash in the pool of Siloam." This word means sent. So the man went and washed and came home seeing. His neighbors and those who had formerly seen him begging asked, "Isn't this the same man who used to sit and beg?"
Some said he was, and others said, "No, he just looks like him." But the beggar kept saying, "Yes, I am the same one." They asked, "Who healed you? What happened?" He told them, "The man they called Jesus made mud and spread it over my eyes and told me, 'Go to the pool of Siloam and wash yourself.' So I went and washed, and now I can see." "Where is he now?" they asked. "I don't know," he replied.
This is like one of those stories that I feel like I want to use like the phrase like deceptively simple. Like it's just something happens. It's a miracle,
mm-hmm.
no doubt
mm-hmm.
about that, but it's mm-hmm. the Bible. Maybe you're expecting to see miracles.
Yeah.
It's not like there are these things that I can't help but feel like they are these ironies. There's like, oh, there's more here. That was a simple sentence.
Oh, yeah.
But there's so much to unpack in that.
Or even mm-hmm. like you said, oh, it's a simple story. This is something we teach to our kids and said, he just made a man who has been blind his entire life see.
Yeah.
By putting mud on his eyes and telling
that
him to
he
wash.
Made out of saliva.
Yeah, mm. come on.
Oh, I can't. I think about that and I'm like, I don't care if it's Jesus' spit. I don't want that. But I would if it was a miracle.
Isn't it like, man, I don't even know where to start with this. This has that, can we agree that there's something as like a Bible weird. This falls into that like Bible weird genre where you're like, why?
Oh, for sure.
Why does that happen? We all accept that because maybe, like you just said, Hope, maybe we've taught this in Sunday school. Maybe you've already heard it a long time. But if you're hearing this with fresh ears, maybe that's the first thing. You're like, hold up. Spitting, touching face with spit mud. What? But the first thing that gets me is even before that. Verse 2 is where I see the first irony in this story. And there's two parts of the disciples' question that blows my mind. "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so many assumptions layered into that question. Yeah. That, first of all, that his sins in life could have been seen ahead of time by God, and that he would have been judged before he was even born, to be born blind, because God knew he was going to sin. Mm-hmm. I don't know if any of us think that way.
Yeah.
But apparently, the disciples were. Why else did they ask, Jesus, did this guy sin, or does his parents sin because he's been blind his whole life?
Yeah.
What?
Why would they just ask if his parents sinned? Like, if that's their line of thinking, okay, why not just ask if his parents sinned? Because why would he be born blind? Did he sin in the womb? Is that even possible?
I guess maybe the assumption that we're all born sinners is probably what they're operating off of. That, like, not having had sinned, but being born into sin or being born with sin is probably what they're going for with.
And it's at least, it's at least part of it. But here's where I think it even gets a little different, Hope, because they're saying, it seems anyways.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they're saying there's something particularly bad here.
Yeah.
Because he's blind and he's always been blind. And this is the disciple saying,
yeah,
we think God always works like this, that it must be a punishment for somebody. So did God look ahead in this man's future and know there was going to be some particularly bad sin that he needed to be born blind for?
Yeah.
Now, I don't know. I'm reading that into. I'm just assuming the disciples imagine that he's not going to sin in the womb. And the disciples, if they believe that everybody's born sinful, well, then why would he be born blind any more than anybody else was born blind?
It's so weird. It's so interesting.
Can you imagine the pressure of living in a time period where if something is physically wrong with you, it's assumed that you sinned? Because in that time period, if a woman couldn't bear children, it was assumed that it was her problem and that she sinned and she needed to repent and fix the problem. Can you imagine that, how much pressure that would put on just life in general? It's like, oh, if something's wrong with me physically, then there's something in my life I have to really reflect on and figure out what I did wrong to then try and fix it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Touchy topic here. And I'm not the one with the answers. Somebody with the right answers for this needs both a medical degree and a theology degree. But I'm going to glance on it anyways, because you listening need to know we're thinking it too. Don't we treat these days various types of struggles the same way? It must be a sin issue. It must be a you thing.
Yeah.
Like, I'm talking here, again, many degrees are needed to be able to comment on this wisely, so I'm not giving anybody medical advice here. But don't we treat a lot of mental health this way?
Absolutely.
It's got to be your sin. It's got to be your lack of faith. You must be, if not judged, at least receiving consequences from God, because otherwise this wouldn't happen to you. Yeah. You must be sinning.
And that shows, too, in the approach we take to try to fix some of it. Some of it, you hear the phrase, oh, if you just have more faith, you'll be healed. Or, oh, cast all your anxieties on him and your anxiety will go away. And just that mentality of that phrase of, oh, if you just do that, it'll fix all the problems. And you're not doing it, so therefore something's wrong with you.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, there is... we are called to cast our cares on the Lord, but that's not always the whole
fix. It's not a fixer. It's part of the solution, but it's not the solution in and of itself a lot of the time.
Well, and also, like just knowing that God calls people, for whatever reason, to carry different burdens.
Yeah.
You don't need to be wrong to have a different burden than me. It's not like we don't know what burden the Apostle Paul had when he references in, what is it, 1 Corinthians, where he talks, where he talks about the thorn in the flesh that he's received.
Oh, yeah.
And he prays for God to take away an unnamed struggle he has, an unnamed affliction he has. And God says he's not going to take it away because it's for his glory. And when Paul is weak, God can be strong in him.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not, who's to say that what you're dealing with in mental health might be an issue that you don't need to feel like it's your sin problem, and like who knows? I'm not saying you shouldn't look for help. I'm saying it's a good idea to look for help. And just like any other struggle in this life, maybe the way you bear it is a way for you to bring God glory.
Absolutely.
And if we look at the answer to the disciples' question here and the answer that Paul gives us about the thorn in his flesh not being removed, they're both very similar. It's so that God's works can be displayed or God's glory can be displayed. And it's so almost comforting in a sense to know that, okay, this struggle that I'm carrying and that I'm walking through, yes, I'm seeking help from it, whether it's medical help or support or whatever you're seeking to help heal whatever's going on, but it's also that God's glory might be displayed. And for me, that kind of challenges me when I'm in that tough circumstance or that one that I don't understand. It's like, oh, where am I seeing God work? And how am I seeing him work in a miraculous way? Because yes, this man was healed miraculously. Well, what things do I see God doing in my life that are considered miraculous? I mean, I'm a sinful human being and kindness, goodness, gentleness, faithfulness, the fruit of the Spirit. If that's coming out in my life, that's all God and that's all to his glory. So yeah, it's just comforting to see how God works in those circumstances that don't make sense to us.
So glad we have this. Man, we would be, without that one statement from Jesus, I'm not saying there's nowhere else you could find comfort in the Bible for this, but it is just so reassuring for him to just tell the disciples straight up when they ask the question, this isn't because of his sin that he's sick. It's not because his parents sinned that he's sick. It's not because anybody sinned that he's sick, except Tim will add, I'm wondering here if we could add in Adam and Eve and say, well, but that's not the point. That's not the question.
They get enough flack already.
No, Jesus is like, this is not about finding blame. This is about who's about to get credit. God is going to get all this credit. And then Jesus has an interesting phrase that I'll admit, I think I misunderstood for a bit, and I've got a different way of looking at it now. As long as it is day, Jesus talking here, we must do the works of him who sent me. Night is coming when no one can work. And this is where I just admit myself here. I had kind of assumed while I was reading this, like, does that mean now? Because Jesus isn't here on earth. Is this the night? I mean, it feels pretty dark. It feels pretty dark right now, doesn't it, guys? And I'm thinking about what he says next. While I am in the world, I am the light of the world. That's really interesting to me because there's another place in the Bible where Jesus calls us
the light of the world.
The light of the world. While he was in the world, he was the light. Now that he's not in the world, so to speak, bodily anymore, well, his light is still in the world in us.
In us, yeah.
And we don't have to live in defeat. Like, oh, the darkness, just always, it's dark world, Satan's the ruler of the earth, you know, like, we can't make any headway here. Okay, we understand the ways in which we feel discouraged by that. But I'm thinking we can still say that we must, like Jesus said, we must do the works of him who sent me. Like, we can still, we can continue the mission here. Yeah. That's just...
And I love that because to me, there's so, for me personally, there's a lot of the miracles and the works of Jesus, things that people kind of write off as, oh, this was just for the biblical times. This was just for that time period. It was just for Jesus. That I truly feel like God called us into this. He called us to follow in his footsteps and lay hands on people and heal them and perform miracles and, you know, speak his words to them and that they would be healed and move mountains and all of these things. And it's like, well, I always, and it's so funny because it was my least favorite song growing up as a child, but the hide it under a bushel, no, I'm going to let it shine. Like that God gave us the ability to be his light when, as soon as we accept him, like we are the light of the world all of a sudden, which is so, that in and of itself is so crazy because I'm like, hold up, I can't be the light because I am so dirty. I am so dark. But also, he's like, no, you are the light. You are now my light. And what a, like, What an honor, what a privilege, what a, I don't want to say burden, but a heavy mantle to carry on
like that,
that we shouldn't just ignore and throw away.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Hope, sometimes I think we can overcomplicate it and be like, oh, but it's so complicated how we, I guess what I'm trying to say, sometimes like I can be intimidated to be that light. But if I look at this blind man's response to having the spit mud put on his eyes, Jesus told him to go and wash in the pool. What if he didn't go and wash? Like,
yeah,
would he have been healed? Like, how could this story have played out differently?
Yeah.
And that just got me thinking. I'm like, faith and obedience go hand in hand.
Absolutely.
And in this case, it's so simple. Go and wash. And then when he comes back, they're like, oh, you know, who healed you? Well, Jesus did. I don't know if this man realized it or not, but he's proclaiming Jesus. He's proclaiming the works of Jesus. And it's like,
Yes. Oh,
it can be so simple. Sometimes I get so caught up in the pressure or the feeling unworthy or I can't do it. And it's like, oh, but faith and obedience go hand in hand. And it's just as simple as going and washing, going and doing.
Yeah.
It's so simple. It's so simple. And like, it's so accessible. And yet you can absolutely see in every way how somebody would keep themselves from experiencing this.
Oh, absolutely. Because even as a Christian, I've experienced that of being like, it's right there. It's so easy. I don't want to do it. Mm. Why? A million different reasons. I'm scared. I'm worried. What are people going to think of me?
Yeah.
What's going to happen to me? What if I do follow this? What if I don't? How is it going to change my life? Like, you just, and I, of course, those thoughts are not from God because he's not going to keep you from something good. Mm-hmm. So it's like, yeah, it's really easy to just whoop, right off the path.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What if he had said, if this guy was really a healer, he wouldn't need me to wash myself with water. If he were really healer, he could just, he wouldn't even need mud. What is this guy?
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand how he's doing this process. So I'm not going to follow it. Like, I'm thinking to myself right now, Tim, if you were that blind man, would you have listened?
Yeah.
In my own humanity of the way I think the world rationally works, I probably would have thought, this is crazy. If this guy were really a miracle worker of God, he would have just said the word.
Or just been so desperate at that point that, like, whatever, I'll try anything. I've been blind my whole, you know, that desperation. Mm-hmm.
But you know what else he could have done, though, too? He could have said, and I'm inventing something here, but I think it's worth saying, he could have said, I've heard about how Jesus heals other people. He just says the word and they're healed. So this isn't going to work. What's he doing with me?
Absolutely.
He's doing something different with me now.
Yeah.
And isn't that interesting? Jesus doesn't heal people in just one way.
Oh, I love that. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. He kind of tries every avenue possible to be like, listen, I'll do it and you'll be healed. I'll do it and a miracle will happen. I will touch you. I will speak over you. I will say a prayer from a million miles away.
Yeah.
You'll get healed. You'll be resurrected. You'll be whatever. And he's just like, don't underestimate the ways in which I will work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And our small thinking could box him in and keep us out of getting the blessing.
Yeah.
And praise God, this guy, maybe he just was as desperate as you said, Hope. Because it's really interesting. He doesn't completely, totally yet see who Jesus is.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to, and that's awesome. And he's being obedient like you're talking about, Becky. And that's super awesome because he just goes. He just does it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe he's thinking, what do I have to lose? And that could be what any of us say, whether we are begging on the street as this man literally was or not. Each one of us is spiritually just as impoverished. He does it. He goes. And he washes. This is a cool symbolism here. The pool's name translated means sent. Mm-hmm. And the man was sent by Jesus. That's just, thank you, John, for that cool note there. We wouldn't have gotten that otherwise. The man went and washed, verse 7 says, and came home seeing. Here's where I'm thinking, like, I'm just wondering about irony. The way, you know, authors use irony, you pay attention to, like, words that get repeated and concepts that are repeated. went and washed, blind, talking about blind here, came home seeing. Next verse, his neighbors and those who had formerly seen him begging asked, isn't this the same man who used to sit and beg? Some claimed that he was, verse 9. Others said, no, he only looks like him. I'm like, this is interesting. John, what are you doing here? There's a lot of sight talk. Well, it's definitely a miracle about a guy getting his sight back. But, and forgive me if I'm getting too, you know, whatever, poetic here. But John is all about people reacting to or seeing, if you will, seeing
their
Jesus.
Perception.
Yeah, perception. Good word for that. Exactly. Their perception of who Jesus is. Mm-hmm. And here, a blind man is seeing and other people are dismissing him. There's just like this shallowness of thought and this judgment that they have of the way they look at this guy who they thought it could only ever be one thing. He's just that beggar. We know him. Mm-hmm. We've seen him. And they don't even talk to him. This is really awkward.
That's so fair.
That's interesting. They're,
like, he has to pipe up and be like, excuse me, by the way, I'm the guy you're talking about.
Yeah, they're all talking to each other.
Yeah.
Like, is that the guy? That's not the guy. He doesn't look like it. And then he's like, I'm right here. Just talk to me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that happens later on in the story, too, that this guy doesn't, there's no respect given to him because his status in the world at that time was just like, you get the feeling like he's treated like the lowest of the low. And here, Jesus gives him this beautiful place of prominence. And John, you know, enshrines him in our memory forever in this incredible chapter. But they don't even, no, he only looks like him. But he himself insisted, I am the man. And then they ask him, they're like, okay, you're different now.
What's up?
What's up?
Yeah.
What is up?
I'm wondering how, like, even just his physical posture would have changed.
Oh.
Because
definitely.
If you're blind, you use other tools like a walking cane and whatnot to be able to figure out where you're going and to walk. But you don't always hold yourself the same way because obviously when you can see, it's much different.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that was also like throwing them off because he wouldn't have been holding himself the same.
There's more of a hunch to your posture because you're being afraid of falling, wanting to lower yourself to the ground, not having you're using your, like Becky said, you know, you're using your feet and your hands to feel all of that. As an actor, I've done exercises of like having to pretend to be blind for a character. And, you know, just you're utilizing every other sense. And so you hunch into yourself. And if all of a sudden this man is walking, standing upright, tall, looking around, of course he's going to, even though it's obviously the same person, there's still that, it's like the Clark Kent glasses thing.
Yes.
Like that's kind of how it feels. But it's like, that's kind of
what
it is.
You're not Superman, right? You don't act like him.
Exactly.
You look just like him.
Yeah.
That's kind of blowing my mind. I'm never going to read this ever again without thinking of Clark Kent and Superman because they see the same man. They probably, it's his hometown. It's his neighbors and those who had seen him before every day on their way to work, you know, you think of. And it's this guy, they're like, nah, that's just mild-mannered reporter Clark Kent at the Daily Planet. That's not Superman. Mm-hmm. Sure, they have the same face, but I mean, look at how he's acting. Isn't that interesting? John is getting at this whole thing that so much more than appearance. Mm-hmm. So much more than appearance. Like, who Jesus really is and was and who he's really calling and what his kingdom is really going to be like. So much more than appearance.
I love that you get to the end and he just says, where is he now? I don't know.
Yeah.
The man that just healed you, gave you sight, and he was just so excited that he just probably started, like the man that was healed from being a cripple, like he just ran around just walking and praising God, like just probably, I hit the music stand. I'm so excited.
We're doing the same thing here.
That he just got up, and he probably didn't, I don't know, like is your first thought to go thank God, but it is, but he didn't even go physically see Jesus.
No, that's interesting. That's that is the interesting thing about this guy because I've heard some sermons look into this, and I admit I read into it. I already said I've done that. And so I think it's reading into it to say what I've heard some sermons say, which is like, this guy wasn't giving Jesus credit because he didn't go back and find him. Mm. But I think, Hope, you make a great point when you're saying, like, he's probably ecstatic for one thing. Also, apparently he's tied up in a debate with his neighbors and, like, having to prove his own identity.
And he's just, like, how far was it for him to get to the pool to wash? Like, okay, how much time elapsed between Jesus putting the mud on his eyes, him getting to the pool and washing, him being able to see for the first time? And I imagine he'd take some time and, like, actually see the world. And, like, probably that's got to be so overwhelming.
Overwhelming, disorienting. I have a feeling he was probably dizzy for a while for the first time being able to see and, like, calibrating kind of his sight to his movement and everything.
Yeah.
So then by the time he gets back to his neighbors, Jesus had plenty of time to disappear, and we've seen in other scriptures where he just disappears in a matter of 2 seconds, it seems.
Yep.
So I wonder if part of the reason why he didn't go thank Jesus was, could he find him? He wouldn't know what he looked like. Yes, he would know his name. Yeah.
Oh, my word.
Yeah.
But he wouldn't know what he looked like.
No. I mean, he would know what he sounded like, but he wouldn't know what he looked like. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He knows his name. We know that. And that's going to be super significant here, especially, actually, I mean, we can even go as far as to say, we're going to look at in next episode what happens. This guy is brought by his neighbors. So they I don't know if they physically take him, but he is brought by them to the religious authorities. So this guy is tied up.
Yeah.
Like he not literally, but he is he is encumbered with the situation. He can't just up and run back to Jesus, it seems. Wow, that blows my mind, Becky, what you just said, that the dude had still never seen Jesus. He couldn't point him out in a crowd. He'd have to just go and say, Jesus, I know it's a guy named Jesus. Pretty common name at the time anyways, from what I understand. And man, it's so interesting how this doesn't make Jesus nervous. You know, we think about sharing the gospel or something and feeling like, oh, we need to know, did they make the decision? Are they sealed? Are they in it? Are we done? Did I tie up the loose ends? One, Jesus is God, so he has a different perspective on things, but maybe we can, like, learn from the peace he seems to have here too, because Jesus knows that God is going to work in this guy's life and he's going to get where he needs to be. But right now, the man still doesn't know. He knows enough. He's been obedient. In fact, he can even already start testifying, and he's going to really soon. But right now, I love what you pointed out, Hope. It's still an I don't know for him. They said, what happened? Like, they want to know his testimony. And he's like, all right, I'll give it to you. I'm reading from verse 11. The man they call Jesus. How interesting is that? Like, he still doesn't know him. Yeah. The man they call Jesus made some mud and put it on my eyes. He told me to go to Siloam and wash. So I went and washed, and then I could see. Where is this man? They asked him. I don't know. He's in the process, and Jesus is okay with leaving him there because he knows God's still working in his life. It's just faithfulness at every step, knowing that, one, God is faithful and we can trust him and how he's working in people's lives. But two, this guy is being faithful to what he was called to do. Mm-hmm. He didn't know why he had to go and wash. He didn't know why this miraculous healer made mud for the first time in this very bizarre healing. All he knows is that it worked. And this man's name is Jesus.
With the I am the light of the world statement, Jesus chose to allow somebody to see light. It's like, oh, he was blind. Now maybe he could see shadow. Maybe it was just dark. We don't really know, like, the extent of his blindness, but it's like, oh, Jesus uses the I am the light of the world statement and heals somebody and allows them to see light.
That's awesome. He is bread when he multiplies loaves. And he's light when he gives sight. It's just, that's awesome. This is the one. He's the one. It's really good to see him and to know, like, we know his name. The man called Jesus. Yes. Yes. That is our King. Thank you for joining us for If That Makes Sense, the family life podcast about what life is really like as a young adult following Jesus. If you enjoy the show, please send it to a friend. Your genuine appreciation of the show is the best way for word to get out. And it would make our day if you left us a rating and a review wherever you found this episode. Family Life has more great original podcasts that you can check out at familylife.org/podcast. Thanks again, and we look forward to having you along for the next one.